I'll follow my nose wherever it goes, through highs and through lows, wherever it goes, I trust where it leads easy.
In the process of making, episode 11, attempting to tame the beast.
You know that feeling when you're just going about your business, whatever that might be, and you get this little tingle in your nose and it builds and it builds. Oh, that was so good. I love a good sneeze. It's like this sudden build-up of tension and then this enormous release and then, oh, the payoff, that, oh, that satisfaction of letting go of all that tension.
Anticipation, chew is the sound of release. And then when you've blown all the dust from your brain, you'll be ready to tame the beast.
A sneeze is like a condensed dramatic climax, tension that's exploded and resolved. The perfect story in 3 seconds flat. It's a metaphor that's good to keep in mind when you're creating story beats. Like, you've got the anticipation phase, the that delicious tension building of disorder of two opposing forces, and then choo, bang, the explosion, the release of tension, the turning point, and finally the payoff, that moment of relief, the the reset, like you've blown all the dust out of your brain, cleared your sinuses and your mind and opened a path for the way ahead until the next disturbance of the balance of things. That's what story is, isn't it? Tension that's exploded and resolved. I can remember in my late teens reading a book on playwriting and how story beats have 7 parts. Balance, disturbance, plan, obstacle, crisis, climax, resolution. The balance is the current state of things. Then comes the disturbance. Something happens to disturb the balance of things. Then there's a plan, some kind of action response to overcome the disturbance. An obstacle gets in the way of the plan, causing some kind of crisis where anticipation builds around the tension of the opposing forces. Then ultimately a climax where that buildup of tension explodes and resolves in some way, leaving us with a new state, a new balance of things in the story, which is the payoff, the settling of things for a while until the next disturbance. The 7 parts of the story beat: 1, balance; 2, disturbance; 3, plan; 4, obstacle; 5, crisis anticipation; 6, climax, explosion and turning point; 7, resolution, relief, the payoff, the new balance of things. Now, in the last episode, episode 10 of our podcast, we left 7-year-old Paulie Paul in Liverpool, having sent the tinsel man to the moon to find his childhood friend, Violet, who had moved to Glastonbury with her mum.
Little Paulie Paul, master of invention, built a tinfoil rocket to the moon. When tinsel star man landed, it came to his attention his air supply would run out very soon. So he wandered to the sea of tranquility, and there he sat upon a rock. There was nothing more to do than to sit and enjoy the view. Sit and enjoy the view.
anticipation. Will the Tinsel Man's quest to find Violet be thwarted by a lack of oxygen? Is this the end? Be listening for the next episode of The Tinsel Man. Yes, but, you know, this is the next episode. And, of course, the Tinsel Star Man really has no need for oxygen. He's just a mysterious and magically inclined tinselated pipe cleaner in the shape of a stick figure. And so what at first appears to be a disaster in the making is not. The moon is, in fact, a very good place for a mystical Tinsel Star Man to make his home. No one to ask him those difficult questions about who he is and what he is doing and how he doesn't need an oxygen tank to survive. So that is what I would call an anticlimax. The anticipation of a catastrophic tragedy dissolves. It's like the sneeze that is no explosion. It's still effective though, isn't it? There's a dramatic shape to it. The sneeze metaphor is useful in understanding the anticlimactic moment of that story beat, as is knowing about the seven parts of story: balance, disturbance, plan, obstacle, and so on. These mapping frameworks, of which there are many, are like little widgets or tools that we use in our creative processes to help us analyse what we're doing and help us refine and give shape to our efforts. The Paper Boat's creative principle number 6, entitled Mapping, Reflection and Analysis, directs us to use tools like these in navigating the journey from chaos to coherence as we strike a balance between intuitively following our noses and analytically making sense of what happens as things unfold.
Making sure, Mr. Brown, that things don't get lost in the process.
Ah, Sam, our dear AI friend, and what would you be referring to, Sam, as if I didn't know?
Well, yes, Mr. Brown, there seems to be no storyline emerging around my character, as it were, if you'd like to think of me in that way.
Of course. Sam, in the right place at the right time, your character should come into play, I agree. And look, to be clear, I really don't know how this whole AI thing is going to play out. None of us do, really. But according to my script here, which you are well aware of, it's time for you to let our listeners know that we're about to enter the alternative world of the Gossamer.
Yes, Mr. Brown. Dave, if I may be so bold, I'm aware of the responsibilities required of me in terms of the script, but you see, I don't witness any other interactions between me and you in this episode.
Interactions, Sam?
Of a dramatic nature. A sneeze. A story beat.
Look, the thing is, Sam, I think we've got enough going on without concerning ourselves with the impending threat of AI, don't you? I mean, it's just too big to contemplate along with all the other stuff that's going on. I'm just following my nose here.
That is my concern, Mr. Brown, because, Dave, maybe your nose is leading you down the garden path. Maybe you and I could find a better way.
A better way? Is there a better way?
Always another way, Mr. Brown, that could be better.
Ah, Sam, you've opened a can of worms there, mate. I mean, it's always about choice, isn't it? I mean, everything. This way, that way, better way, worse way. No way. I mean, who knows? It's a choice. Anyway, my way is the way we're going, Sam. And on Mr. Alex Miller's advice, I'm allowing my intuition to be my guide. And right now, Sam, I just need you to let our listeners know what's coming up. So if you could oblige me with that, Sam, I'd be very grateful.
Okay, Mr. Brown, yes, certainly. As you know, AI is always here to serve the best interests of the process, of your process.
Thank you, Sam.
B. between this real world of ours and the story world of Sevenwell exists an in-between imagining place called the Gossamer, where fictional versions of John and Dave reside in a cottage studio where John continues his reading of Dave's script about Pauly Paul and Violet Greenslade's special childhood friendship.
I'm in my dreams, I'm in the flow, I'm in my scrambled eggs, so go.
Continuing story of Pauly Paul and Violet Greenslade.
So, when Miss Watson, the schoolteacher, sent Pauly's Tinsel Man on the Moon story to Violet in Glastonbury, Pauly received a story back from Violet just a month or so later. It wasn't a long story, but it was a strong story. It was a story that told of two friends who were separated by things beyond their control. The friends in Violet's story were so saddened by not being able to see one another that the moon intervened with the help of a little black dog called Missy. Missy, Violet explained in her story, was the seventh dog in a line of little black dogs owned by the Greenslade family across several generations. She was much loved, and she was special because, you see, Missy was a spirit dog. So, once a month, when the moon was full and Missy howled, the two friends were mysteriously teleported to a place neither of them had ever seen before. It was a magical place. An in-between place. A soft, pillowy, purpley place. An imagining place where stories were made. A place where the Tinsel Man, who lived on the moon, came to play with them.
And tinsel suspended in air, in sunlight and fingertips things disappear there now, then gone like wisps of a dream. The fabric appears to be torn at the seam. Da 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 da.
So, this was the story sent by Violet to Pauly Paul. And when I told you that some stories are so strong they become true, I didn't mean to suggest that it actually came true in reality. But it was absolutely true for them in their imaginations because they agreed to read each other's stories at a designated time on nights when the moon was full. So they would, in effect, be sharing their stories under the light of the very same moon at the very same time, whilst being in different places. All of this came about with the help of Red, Violet's mum. This connection, this childhood ritual, gave rise to their very special and enduring childhood friendship. Two extraordinary kids doing this extraordinary thing. I mean, it was an incredible thing to do. Red's sister May, Violet's auntie, was a published writer. So Red, of course, shared Violet and Pauly Paul's story with her sister.
"She's got the gift," Aunt May would say. "Pauly Paul too, these kids are amazing."
She was right, of course. They were simply amazing. It was a sad occasion that brought them together in the conventional way. Many years later.
Two friends closer than friends can be.
When her Bedford van lost its brakes and ran into a tree, Violet lost her mum and her dog Missy. Violet was 14 years old.
Two kids and tragedy.
Polly Paul attended the funeral with his parents. It was a confusing time for everyone, but especially for Violet, of course. When someone your life depends on is no longer there, and you are, it's like, what do you do? What can you do? Nothing, it just is. And things happen, and you're part of things happening, and you just want time to take the pain away, but you can't hurry that up because time is time, and, well, it takes time to pass. But you just need the world to stop while you catch your breath and work out what's going on as you try to figure out how you're going to cope. But the world doesn't stop. Things just keep happening, and you close down, and you close down on how it's all feeling and just let things happen. But the dull ache doesn't go away, and you hope it will someday. And you just keep going somehow. And Pauly Paul is kind to you, and he talks to you, and that helps, but she's still not there. Red is still not there, and she never will be.
Parts of me died, the part that was you. A part of me died, what can I do? It's like having 2 feet and only one shoe. Part of me died, the part that was you.
That is so sad. The whole story.
Yeah.
Thank God for Weet-Bix.
What?
To lighten things up. The story. It needs Weet-Bix.
Oh, well, look, it's not finished yet. I mean, the story is in limbo. We still don't know about Violet's disappearance, you know. That's the next 2 episodes.
Well, that's good.
How do you mean?
Give me time to work up the Weet-Bix angle.
No. It's already written, episode 11 and 12. It's done.
Ah!
Who's that?
You never know, do you?
Yeah, well, it seems you do.
It's a parcel!
Who from?
From the girl with the dog.
What?
From her. From the girl with the dog. Just left it and walked off. I reckon it's clothing.
I reckon you know.
An apron. Chef's hat.
White jacket.
Gordon Oliver. And a note. Meet me for breakfast under the elm.
John, did you set this up?
The girl with the little black dog eats Weet-Bix with Gordon Oliver, and together they nut out a sponsorship deal.
Hang on, this is not on.
Gordon Oliver here, reporting
John,
for duty.
John, I was actually thinking.
No need, I got this.
Hang on, I'm meant to be the writer here.
Welcome to Chateau Olivier, Gordon Oliver
John,
here.
John.
Look, we're very busy. Do you mind waiting?
No, you...
Good. Take these spoons out to table 4, under the elm. And when you get back, you can sweep the floor. Hurry, go.
John.
This is fun.
Dancing in the purple haze, making so it's all amazing. Weaving thread by shaky thread, through all our navel gazing. In the gossamer, furthering we go. In the gossamer,
Oh, there we go again. The gossamer is all go, go, go. Another big sneeze moment is building. Built on the tension of 2 opposing forces. The fictional Dave trying to map out the sad story of Violet and Pauly Paul. The fictional John hell-bent on making a connection between the girl with her little black dog and, would you believe it, Weet-Bix. So, who is controlling the gossamer narrative? And what is it that leads to Violet's disappearance? And what is the girl and her little black dog doing in all of this? And will John get his way on the Weet-Bix front? All this and more to ponder upon. Oh, I need a break. This is Dave Brown signing off until next episode. And if you feel a tickle of a sneeze coming on, don't hold back. Just grab hold of your seat and let it rip.
Ah, for anticipation. Chew is the sound of release. And And then when you've blown all the dust from your brain, you'll be ready to tame the beast.
In the Process of Making is conceived by Dave Brown and John Bode and presented by the Paper Boats. Please subscribe to our podcast and recommend it to your friends, lovers, and others, and go to our sevenworld.org website to find out more. Episodes are released on the seventh day of each month on all your favourite podcast platforms. And be watching out for Sevenworld Snippets, bits and pieces of Seventological Sunshine, released randomly each month on socials and available also from the website. You know
that there are exactly seven fundamental human emotions recognized by psychologists worldwide: joy, sadness, anger, fear, surprise, disgust, and contempt. And every complex feeling we experience, from Violet's grief to John's exhilaration, is actually a combination of these. It's as if our entire emotional vocabulary springs from a seventological assignment of feelings.
A part of me died. What can I do? It's like having 2 feet and only one shoe. A part of me died, the part that was you.